Welcome to Unreal, the season of the witch. Kissing has been a part of human cultures for thousands of years. It holds a multitude of meanings. A kiss of love, a kiss of peace, a kiss of friendship, respect, or romance. It's no wonder, then, that kisses have captured the imagination of storytellers throughout history. Although less common than in Disney films and modern retellings, kissing was nevertheless a potent and powerful mini-ritual in folktales, one that could lift enchantments or break the most powerful of spells. But kissing could sometimes have a darker purpose. From Judas' kiss of betrayal in the New Testament to the kiss of death used in modern-day mafia stories, kissing a person does not always lead to a positive outcome. Sometimes it condemns, captures, or even curses them to an altogether less happy fate. In 1661, rumors swept the town of Youghal in County Cork about the deadly kiss of a woman named Florence Newton. Her kiss, it was said, could bring terrible pain, claim lives, and marked her out for what she truly was, a witch. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. After the trial against Alice Kittler and her companions in the 14th century, there were relatively few witch trials recorded in Ireland, at least in comparison to Britain and Europe. There were a few reasons for this. Among the Gaelic Irish, witches were viewed as being much less threatening. People believed in good witches, wise women relied on by the community for charms, and even the malevolent witches just stole butter or food through their spells, rather than bringing serious harm to people. Instead of accusing particular people or women in the community of being witches, rumours of witchcraft tended to focus on the act itself, while the witches remained nameless. The Gaelic and Catholic Irish had plenty of their own counterspells, prayers or rituals that they used to combat witchcraft, rather than putting their trust in a legal system belonging to British rule. As a result, the most well-known witchcraft trials in Ireland in the 17th and 18th centuries took place in the smaller Puritan communities, rather than Catholic ones. Puritan was a term used to describe the deeply religious Protestant groups that sprang up in the 16th and 17th centuries. These groups fiercely rejected Roman Catholic practices and sought to further reform or purify the Church of England after the Protestant Reformation. Puritan groups gained huge power and influence in the 16th and 17th centuries, culminating in an English civil war that saw King Charles I executed and the Puritan leader Oliver Cromwell rise to power as England's Lord Protector, ready to begin his brutal plantation of Ireland. Puritans were known to believe strongly that evil forces existed in the world. Their rise to power in England brought with it a major increase in witch trials. Matthew Hopkins, known as the Witchfinder General, accused over 200 people of witchcraft, causing many to face trial and execution. But by 1661, Cromwell was dead, a king was back on the throne, and the people of Youghal in County Cork who had supported Puritanism and the Cromwellian regime, face the re-establishment of a church they had rejected, and the anger and revenge of those who had suffered under Cromwell. The Puritans of Youghal were terrified that they would suffer reprisals, both by radical Protestants and the Catholic population of Ireland. Witch panics have always thrived in these unstable communities, and this was a time filled with upheaval and fear for the Youghal people. And where the seeds of fear are sown, whispers and accusations are never far behind. And so, it's against this backdrop that we see a feud between two women rock a community to its core, and the kiss of an old woman take on magnified and maybe even magic proportions. The trial of Florence Newton is a very different case than that of Alice Kittler. Florence was much closer to our modern-day conceptions of women accused of witchcraft. She was old and poor and an outsider in her community. Shortly before Christmas, in the year 1660, Florence Newton came begging to the door of the Pine household in Youghal. John Pine was a respected and wealthy gentleman, the former bailiff of the town. But it was John Pine's servant, Mary Longdon, a woman of about 18, who answered the door. Despite their age difference, Mary and Florence knew each other and went back about 3 or 4 years. And perhaps that is why Florence expected that Mary would be generous in her time of need. Mary was salting beef for the winter in a powdering tub, and Florence begged her for a piece. But Mary refused. She could not give away her master's beef, she told Florence. At this, Florence became angry, Mary later told the courts. She shouted that if Mary was good, she would have given it to her. And she left, muttering darkly to herself. About a week later, when Mary Longdon went to get water for the household, she ran into Florence again. Florence rushed towards Mary, knocking the pail of water from her head. Then, she violently kissed her. So Mary described later in the courts. Mary, said Florence, I pray thee, let thee and I be friends, for I bear thee no ill will. I can see how these interactions might have been pretty unsettling for Mary. First confronted, and then kissed in a very violent manner. But I can also feel a lot of sympathy for Florence. An old, poverty-stricken woman who was afraid she had lost one of the few friends that she had in the world. Looking back on it now, Florence's behaviour seems desperate rather than dangerous. But Mary didn't think so at the time. And she soon escalated the fight far beyond anything Florence had intended. For a few days later, Mary said, strange things began happening to her. Following her encounter with Florence, Mary claimed that she experienced a strange vision. In her bedroom, she saw two figures, a woman with a veil over her face, and a little old man in silk cloths. The man spoke to Mary and told her that if she listened and followed him, she would have everything her heart desired. I have nothing to say to you, Mary answered. My trust is in the Lord. It was clear to Mary who this strange old man was. Satan, in those days, was represented in two ways, handsome and dark-haired, or old and deformed. And the woman with the veil was clear to her also. It was Florence Newton. In the weeks that followed this vision and her refusal of the temptation, Mary fell ill and became tormented by mysterious and violent fits. Sometimes her seizures were so violent that it took three or four men to hold her down. Her master, John Pine, said that he saw her being pelted by small stones that flew towards her, seemingly from thin air, and vanished before they hit the ground. When Mary vomited, she brought up strange objects, thread, horse's nails, straw, and moss. And there, in her fits, Mary claimed, was always Florence Newton, enjoying her torments, torturing her, and sticking pins into her arms. Now, it's hard to tell with the passage of time what was really going on here. Did Mary have a grudge against Florence, faking her symptoms and accusing her because she wanted to bring Florence harm? Was she a naive and impressionable girl who felt panicked by the idea of witchcraft and truly believed that she was a victim? Or could she have been in a desperate situation herself, accusing Florence because it was the only way to stop people's suspicions from landing on her? We'll never know for sure. What we do know is that Mary Longdon's act was convincing to those who saw it. They believed truly that she was under a powerful enchantment. A witch was in their midst. Mary's family, and all the people who saw her when she was like this, were very afraid of the strange illness that appeared to have come over her. Eventually, the minister was sent for, a man called James Wood. He went with Mary's brother to her room, where he found Mary already deep in one of her strange fits. She was crying out against Florence, pleading with her to stop pricking and hurting her. But when the minister arrived, Mary came back to herself. Minister Wood asked Mary what troubled her. "Gammer Newton," Mary replied. "Why?" asked the minister. "She is not here." "Yes, she is," Mary answered. "I saw her by my bedside." When Mary told Minister Wood the whole story, from the time Florence had come and begged for the beef, to the kiss, to the visions and fits, he, and all who knew Mary, felt sure that witchcraft was at play. But you couldn't just declare that someone was a witch. You had to test for it. Luckily, they knew how. They got Mary up out of her bed and sent for Florence Newton to be brought to the house. Florence refused, saying she was too sick to come, which the family believed was a lie. They called for Richard Mayer, the mayor of the town of Yall, who then came and spoke to Mary. Once he had seen her condition, he sent for Florence Newton himself. The moment Florence arrived in Mary's quarters, Mary immediately fell into a fit again, one that was far more violent and three times as long as any other she had suffered before. The men tested this, sending Florence in and out of the chamber, but keeping her hidden, they said, from Mary. Each time Florence got close to Mary, whether Mary could see her or not. Her fits seemed to worsen again. The tests were far from over, but the people had seen enough to believe that Florence was a serious danger to the community. Florence Newton was placed in a prison cell. There were many other tests carried out to prove Florence's witchcraft. The mayor ordered that Florence be put in manacles while in her prison cell, so that they could see that Mary's condition improved when Florence's movements were restricted. Some of the townsmen, who had read of another method, sent for Florence and made her sit on a stool before trying to drive a sharp awl into the wood of the stool while she sat on it. They were unable to until their third try, which they believed was due to Florence's magical protection. They then pierced Florence's hands with a lance, 1.5 inches deep and 1/4 of an inch long, and again they said they had to cut her several times before she began to bleed. I can only imagine the pain and terror Florence Newton must have felt, totally alone and facing horrifying accusations and barbaric trials. It's no wonder, therefore, that her resistance was beginning to crumble. Soon, she would start to confess. Inside her cell, those who watched Florence claimed that during the night, there were very great noises, as though someone in bolts and chains was running up and down the room. The door of the prison shook and rattled on its hinges. The guards asked Florence what the noise was and who she was speaking to. But Florence replied that she saw nothing and was not speaking at all. The following day, though, presumably after some further coercion, Florence eventually confessed that the noise came from a magical greyhound that was her spirit familiar. A strange companion, it was said, all witches had. On her second night in prison, the 24th of March, Florence faced further questioning and continued to deny that she had done any witchcraft to hurt Mary. In her desperation, Florence actually accused two other women, Goodwife Halfpenny and Goodwife Dodd, suggesting that they may have had something to do with Mary's condition. At this point, the mayor, Richard Mayer, seems to have lost patience with Florence. He called for a boat to be provided for what was known as a water experiment or a swimming test. You may have heard of this test of witchcraft before. It's one of the most famous ones and was a method used regularly by Matthew Hopkins, the witchfinder general in Britain. A suspected witch would be brought out on a boat into the water, bound with ropes so that her right thumb was tied to her left toe and vice versa, and fully submerged in the water. If she sank, she was innocent, although she was likely to drown, so this wasn't much use to her. If she floated, though, then she was a witch. Realizing what was planned, Florence Newton finally confessed. She had overlooked Mary, she said, and she had done her wrong when she kissed her. Overlooking was not quite the same thing as witchcraft. It meant putting the evil eye on someone, causing them harm through wishing them ill in your thoughts, rather than soliciting the help of the devil. The mayor followed up on Florence's claims about Goody Halfpenny and Dodd, both of whom denied the charges. He also brought them to Mary and asked her whether they too had caused her harm. "No," said Mary. "No, they are honest women. It is Gammer Newton that hurts me, and I believe she is not far away." By this time, Most of the town of Yawl had heard what had happened, and rumors were flying fast. Three aldermen, or men of the town council, alleged that Florence had kissed their children, and that each child had died shortly after. Mayor Mayer himself stated that when Florence Newton had been in his house, she had asked the name of his young daughter Grace. A gracious name, Florence had said, taking the child up into her arms and kissing her. 5 weeks later, the mayor said, Grace was dead. The accusations kept coming. In April, a man called David Jones guarded Florence in the prison at Yawl. He was hoping to watch her for any familiars that might enter through the bars of her cell. While he was there, though, he called out to Florence that he had heard that she could not say the Lord's Prayer or the Our Father, and wanted her to prove to him that she could. It was believed by many that witches could not say this prayer, that God or their dark master would prevent the holy words from leaving their evil lips. Florence refused, saying her memory had become poor in her old age. And so, David began to try to teach it to her. Eventually, Florence called him forward, and when he approached her, she recited the prayer, as far as the line, "Forgive us our trespasses," which caused her trouble again. When he had taught it to her, Florence seemed grateful, and she asked if she could kiss his hand in thanks. David put his hand through the grate, and Florence kissed him. We hear all this in the court trial, from his companion, Francis Beasley, who was standing guard alongside him. Because 2 or 3 days later, David began to be troubled by a pain in his arm, and he became convinced that with her kiss, Florence Newton had bewitched him. 2 weeks later, David had died, and Florence faced charges not just for bewitching Mary, but for killing David Jones through her evil ways. For 9 months, Florence faced the speculation and whispers of the town. She spent over 5 of those months in prison, awaiting her trial at the Cork Assizes. These took place on a September the 11th, 1661. 2 charges were laid against Florence: the bewitching of Mary Longdon, for which she could receive a year's imprisonment, and the death by witchcraft of David Jones, for which the punishment was death by hanging. Florence pleaded not guilty to both. The trial was long, with witness testimonies from pretty much everybody I have mentioned: the Mayor of Yawl, Minister James Wood, Francis Beasley, John and Nicholas Pine, and Mary Longdon herself. Nobody spoke for Florence, and she was not given the chance to tell her version of what happened. Those sitting close to her watched her closely and reported anything she said or any movement she made as further evidence for the court. The assembled court were rewarded with a spectacle quite early on in the trial. After Mary Longdon had finished giving her statement, she suddenly fell to the ground in yet another fit, biting at her arms and shrieking in front of the crowd. Those watching swore that Florence had cast her hands at Mary, and that the old woman was pinching her own hands and arms to bring Mary pain. After the fit had been going on for 15 minutes, Mary was carried out and taken to a nearby house, and the court ordered that Florence be put in iron bolts for the rest of the trial. Florence, in fresh terror, cried out, "I am killed, I am undone, I am spoiled," she pleaded. Why do you torment me thus? But the evidence continued. Later in the trial, Florence was called on once again to recite the Lord's Prayer, or the Our Father, to test her witchcraft. It's painful to read this scene in the transcript. Florence, a poor, probably uneducated woman, broken down and alone, facing the accusing eyes of the court and the likelihood of her own execution, reciting a prayer in public from memory. She stumbled through it until she reached the line that had always given her trouble, the line which, incidentally, has the longest word in the prayer, "Forgive us our trespasses." "As we forgive them," said Florence, "as we forgive them." Four times she repeated this line, but she could not finish the prayer. The people's minds were made up. We don't know officially what the verdict was for Florence Newton's trial, but we can take a pretty good guess, because the trial's transcripts record that Florence, a spinster aged about 65 or thereabouts, died that day at the Cork Assizes. Just as we will never truly know Mary Longdon's intentions when she first stirred up the panic in Youghal, we will also never truly be sure of Florence Newton's intentions with her kiss. Most likely, she did mean it in friendship, that her actions were misread and her fate sealed by accusations she never expected. But it is possible that she knew what she was doing would frighten the people around her, and she may even have wished to do them the harm that they accused her of doing. With cases from this long ago, where we have limited knowledge of what happened or of the people involved, we should take care not to assume that we know the true meaning of everything that happened. The real truth will always be a mystery. Two things are clear, though. Florence's kiss, whether meant in friendship or as a threat, was not magical and couldn't save her. And in the end, the non-magical fury of the town proved a far more dangerous force than one old woman's kiss.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. You can find links to the sources and music from today's episode on my website, unrealpodcast.com. The song you are listening to right now is Ivory Tongue by Ayla Nerio. If you enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend or leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. Next week's witchy episode, we'll head to the north of Ireland with Ireland's last witch trial in Ireland McGee. Until then, though, Ganairi on Bohr Lat. Which way stay with the child you're chiding? Sister, son, your ivory tongue is flowing like the waters run, and all my thoughts drop into fair. There's a bound fall on the page down. Fair, there's a bound fall on the pages. Sister, son, your inner lungs are spinning, shapes alive and move in vision. Pray, pray, a spirit time, our hearts will become. And what these words do. Unruly, faster than the breath, your
a righteous fury can be led or be leading. Inside, what a maze of ladders. So you look and look a while. Every which way is fired by the burn of a grandmother, shapes the way of your choosing.
Shake, shake it off like a wave, the dragon ride out of your cave. You're a beast of another dawn, like a wake on the current that a voice will carry you for another lifetime. Keep your sights set right, leaving with the sound of the arrows fly.
Become